This episode of Ghost Stories is brought to you by Satrix, the leading provider of index tracking solutions in South Africa and a proud partner of Ghostmail. With no minimums and easy, low-cost access to local and global products via the Satrix Now online investment platform, everyone can own the market. Visit satrix.co.za for more information. Welcome to this episode of the Ghost Stories podcast featuring Nico Katzke of Satrix. And Nico, we've done a good few of these now. It is always so fun with you. I really enjoy the stuff we talk about. It's always quite broad, but also quite specific. So we dig into some of the details, we talk investment concepts, and I really appreciate your time on these podcasts. And today we are talking about the buzzword of the moment. You recently wrote an article about it for Ghostmail, and this podcast should be quite a nice follow-up and a good opportunity for us to chat. So welcome to the show, and I look forward to tapping into artificial intelligence, which is no reflection on you, but rather on the topic.
Thanks, Ghost. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's an interesting topic. Well worth the discussion. So let's see if we can put out some interesting stuff out there, because I think there's a lot of, you know, misunderstanding about this technology and a lot of people are fearing it. So let's dig into it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's been no shortage of examples of artificial intelligence on the market in years gone by, but now we have something new and exciting called artificial intelligence, said a bit faster. And it is really the buzzword of the moment, right? I mean, the headlines are just NVIDIA, 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 NVIDIA. You'd be, you know, forgiven for thinking that NVIDIA is, in fact, the only company that is listed on the US market. And I guess the reaction to this, you know, you really get two types of people in these scenarios. You get people who run towards this and they just say, okay, if it's hot and it's in the headlines, I want a piece of it. And they buy, and the really smart ones sell in time. I'm always slightly jealous of those people because I really struggle to do that and I don't make money on these things as a result. But I think you've also got to understand what type of investor you are. If you're a momentum trader, this is your absolute bread and butter, but it does become a game of musical chairs. You know, you've kind of got to be very aware that when the music stops, you need to be right next to a chair. Otherwise, you're going to get into serious trouble. And then you also get people who kind of run away from it. They just go, no, this is the tulips all over again. This is crypto. This is .com. This is all of those things. And then maybe some people in the middle who they kind of dip their toes in. I mean, I suppose I'm sort of more in that way inclined. I think, you know, your article was called Fad or Future around artificial intelligence. So that very much gets to exactly the crux of the matter here. And I've reflected on this a lot and spoken to a lot of people who obviously kind of raised the dot-com risks and everything else. I do wonder if we could maybe learn something from what happened, for example, in cloud computing and software as a service as a trend. You know, 10 years ago, this stuff was still very new. And I can imagine that it would have been very easy to be skeptical of these kind of technologies. And yet today they are just absolutely part of our daily lives. There's no debate and we're not going back. I'm definitely never going to go into a store and buy a Microsoft product on a disk ever again in my life. It's not going to happen. You know, so some trends are irreversible and some are not. How do you think about this whole AI story in that context?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a hard question to answer. I think for one, you know, the toothpaste has been squeezed from the tube. I don't think we're putting it back. We've seen the tremendous power that this technology has. To your point, I think few technologies have actually stirred as much emotion, you know, both positive and negative, as this rapid rise that we've seen in AI and its derivative technologies. So people are naturally averse to anything disruptive in their lives. And when a technology like this is unleashed sort of on broader society, people naturally have a sort of more dystopian view of what possibly can go wrong and how we can use this to you know, kill each other or to for nefarious reasons. And with good reason, right? If you think about sort of weapons, you can use it to hunt animals, but you can also use it to create enormous destruction. So it is natural to think of the worst case scenarios, and that has stirred a lot of negative emotions. And I think a lot of people have anxiety about it, and it's not misplaced, like I mentioned. So, but the reality is this technology has now been released on us. I think we've been thrust on a path to see how this technology will mature. Even some of the sort of early movers and CEOs of large companies have alerted themselves to the possibility of misusing this technology. So it is fascinating. I mean, what an interesting time to be alive to see this technology thrust upon us. I think it is similar to cloud computing, like you mentioned, in that it will remain. I just cannot see us not utilizing this technology going forward. So it's not a fad, I think. What we need to ask ourselves is what part of this technology will remain relevant? And that's the thing, right? So if you look at the dot-com crash, for example, it's a different beast, and we can maybe get into that. But how this technology applies in different sectors, that is the question that we need to ask. It certainly will be part of our future work and our future means of doing things. I just can't see us putting this genie back in the bottle, certainly.
Yeah, that seems to be the way it goes, right? There's kind of something new and shiny, and then there's a lot of hype around it. And inevitably, the hype gets to a point where people are just giving it way too much credit. They're too excited about it, and they start making absolutely daft assumptions. So for me, the recent one has been electric vehicles, and there's a little bit of schadenfreude here, I must admit, on just seeing the pullback in this whole, you know, European approach of, well, everyone will have an electric car within the next few years, and, you know, good luck to you if you drive petrol. It's not real life. Anyone who thinks that has never set foot outside of Switzerland. You know, how do you think that's the rest of the world works and what its infrastructure looks like and grids and everything else? It's not going to happen. You know, recently we covered Toyota in Magic Markets Premium, and they're very focused on hybrids. They've taken the intelligent approach to say, hang on, emerging markets actually have all this fuel infrastructure. They can't all be electric. And a lot of other brands are now starting to think that way as well. So I think that's just a very good example of a hype bubble that a piece of it will stick. You know, for sure there is electric vehicle adoption, and I think the future is hybrid, but it's not this insane assumption people made and then, you know, invested accordingly in certain companies in the hope that they would have 100% market share of a new technology in 3 years' time. It's just daft. So that's the risk for investors, right? Is you can actually end up getting completely swept away by this stuff and start to believe the hype stories, because that's what the media likes to sell. You know, if it's in the headlines all the time on CNBC and Fortune and Forbes and everywhere else, then you've got to be nervous. And LVMH was another great example. A year or so ago, it was very much the talk of the town, right? Luxury was it. Nothing could ever go wrong. You know, the CEO and founder was all over the show. And then guess what? Actually, it did go wrong. And the share price came down because the valuations had moved too high. So this is the joy of investing, right? Is the valuation often gets way ahead of the truth. It's difficult in an AI context because it's very hard to guess where this all might go, right?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, there's been bubbles and fads and things, hype in the past. I do think this time it's a bit different. I do think part of this hype is reality.
The famous words, right? Yeah, the famous last words. This time it's different.
Absolutely. Well, maybe not this time, but this technology is different in that, like I said, you know, there's no getting back from the fact that we can harness computers in a way that we haven't in the past. Once you've seen the capability that this can, and thought about how this can disrupt, it's much like the introduction of the internet. You know, it started with overhyped excitement before we actually knew how we're going to apply this, but that didn't stop the internet from becoming ingrained in our daily lives. And I think with artificial intelligence, it's the same thing. Is yes, there's absolutely hype. And I think we're going to look back in a few years and say, well, how did people invest so much in this company or that company? So there's certainly going to be some lemons out there. So absolutely, when it comes to tech exposure, I think there needs to be moderation in terms of excitement. We need to curb our enthusiasm and certainly find those attractive opportunities and be diversified. But this technology, absolutely, I think is going to be part of our daily lives going forward. I don't think it's a fad that will just disappear. You know?
Yeah, so I tend to agree. For better or worse, this thing is here and it's not going away. You know, this is like when the car was invented and then insisting that everyone will always just ride a horse. You know, that's just not how the world works. Sometimes technology does change literally everything. And there are, of course, ways to invest in this that go way beyond buying Nvidia at insane valuations that just, you know, seem to keep going. So one of the ways that I've done it, and it was very interesting to see your comments in your article around the environmental cost of this thing, because the data centers required to run these large language models are using an insane amount of power. And there's actually been quite a lot of pushback, you know, people asking all the right questions from an environmental perspective, like, is this what the world really needs right now? Is more energy usage? You know, is this what we should be focusing on? So I have it on quite good authority that there is a lot of demand for data centers in the Western Cape, for example, with international investors, but they insist that those data centers would then be powered by renewables. Otherwise, they're not prepared to actually touch them. Now, to be fair, I learned this at a climate tech conference, so take it from where it comes, but I'm sure it's true. And it just feels like renewable energy is probably a pretty good opportunity within the broader AI trend, obviously in areas where people are building data centers. So for example, a company I recently invested in, something else we covered on Magic Markets, is Next Era Energy, which is basically just a big power utility in the US, but also with a big renewable energy piece and in an area where people are building data centers. And of course, the valuation looked good. So there I'm getting a piece of the AI trend, but I'm paying an energy utility valuation, not an NVIDIA valuation. So there are many ways to do this. You know, you don't just have to chase the hype trade. I think if you're an investor who likes to dig a bit deeper and sleep at night and not watch your stocks every hour, there are other ways to play this game.
Yeah, so interesting you mentioned about the Western Cape, and I think it stands to reason, right? You have a large, modern city, and you can plug into the most stable energy grid, which is the sun. And so if you can power data centers using our abundance of sun, there's cheap land on the peripheries of Cape Town, I think it absolutely makes sense. You know, and look, I think AI, what we I think we should probably next get into what is AI, what these things are, and crucially what they're not. Maybe we should cover that as well. But just taking a step back, you know, we're definitely, I think, still at the infrastructure phase of this technology. I think there's different layers to any technology becoming mainstream, right? So everybody, I suppose a year or two ago, we're talking about sort of investing in the more smaller, nimble companies that are able to navigate this space and harness this technology, but forgetting the fact that we still need to build the infrastructure, right? For the automobile to become used more widely, you still need roads, streetlights, you know, robots, et cetera. I mean, you know, the infrastructure needs to be built. And to build this infrastructure, we're going to likely see a much greater need for large data centers that are stable, plugged into renewable energy, all these things. So, yeah, watch this space. I think you're going to see more of this provision of infrastructure still. And look, the companies that are going to stand to benefit the most are going to be the ones with scale, the large companies that are able to secure chip supply and the like. And we can maybe get into that a bit later as well, just in terms of how you get access to these companies. What's the best proxy, also, if you like, how best to invest in this technology?
It's like, Nico, in the interest of time, let's get to the points you want to raise. You know, and one of them was in your article, which is basically around the concept of what AI is and what it is not. And I think you made the point in that article, it's not a sentient being. And probably lucky for that, I think we can go to the movies and see some good examples of what goes wrong when the computers take over. Maybe we'll see that in our lifetime. Who knows? But we're not there yet. I mean, right now, these are just large language models that are basically predictors of what the next word might be. I mean, that's at its most basic. So I think let me open the floor to you on that. You know, what are your views on where the technology is and isn't right now? And I guess, what does that mean for the near term?
Yeah, so I think there's two things we need to discuss. First is what this technology is, and then secondly, how we can use it at present. In this discussion, I hope I can perhaps elucidate some of the pain points or some of the risks out there, but also some of the opportunities. So let's take a step back and assume, you know, you just come from the 1980s, you have no idea what this is, and just want to get a quick sense of what is it that what we're talking about. So first, when it comes to AI, you know, the artificial stands for it being derived from a non-organic source. So in other words, it comes from a computer. So that's the artificial part. And that's quite easy to understand. But the intelligence part is probably just great marketing at the moment and should not be construed to mean actual intelligence. And I think this is part of the problem, right? We've anthropomorphized a lot of these technologies to the point where we talk about things like learning, intelligence, sentience, you know, conscience, or the models have improved. Like, these human-like attributes that we're attaching to this technology make it seem like something that it actually is not. Not that it is not a phenomenal technology, don't get me wrong, but I think a lot of the fear and anxiety of this replacing all aspects of our lives and making us redundant in the future is misplaced because we actually forget that these are simply machines that operate on human input, even the ones that train themselves. So the more sort of technical part of your audience might push back on a few things that I'm saying, but hear me out, right? So intelligence, in my mind, requires understanding and not simply the ability to string together sentences without understanding the meaning. And even that simple statement is debated at length by the sort of great minds that are thinking about these things. And in terms of how do we actually think of intelligence? Can a machine be intelligent? Now, there's absolutely endless debate on this. And, you know, even what sentience means, what it means to be alive and thinking and you know, all these things, and whether machines could actually have feelings and consciousness. Honestly, I find this whole debate a bit silly, even though we could, in theory, achieve some form of general intelligence where a machine becomes sentient, even if we had the theory of saying, if we do this, this is the way that we will achieve that. I don't think it's a proven technology, right, in theory, but even if we can do that, it might still be always a ways off. Like, think about nuclear fusion. You know, we know the theory for it exists. We know how to get there, but it always remains decades off, right? Like, almost like Ireland achieving a semifinal in rugby. It's always a few decades in the future. It's never going to materialize, right? And so you kind of think that when it comes to certain technologies and us it achieving what we hope it can achieve or what we envisage it can achieve, it doesn't mean it necessarily will achieve that. So I think we need to curb our enthusiasm when it comes to what machines can do and whether they can feel and have human-like interactions truly. But let me maybe next unpack. So that's artificial intelligence. I think the intelligence part is a misnomer because it is certainly not intelligent. But let me first unpack also what ChatGTP is, how we interact with this, right? Because for me, there's two parts. The one is the broad technology and how it can enable further applications. And then there's also how we currently interact with this and what people are experiencing. So, I mean, first, do you use it yourself? I mean, in your work, has it changed how you operate or do things?
No. So, I mean, I'm probably slightly kicking against it in some respects, but at the same time, I mean, I've seen it used. And if I wanted to start every article with how we navigate a complex landscape in an ever-changing environment, then I'm sure ChatGPT would be great. But unfortunately, no one wants to read that garbage. So I can tell quite quickly when AI has been used to write something at the moment. And it probably does come down to how you prompt it and how you train it and all those things. And I think a lot of people just go and do the bare bones approach. And to be honest, unfortunately, levels of literacy are so horrible out there that actually ChatGPT does still write something better than most people can write. That's actually just a sad point on, you know, global education, to be quite honest. But if you can actually write, then, you know, you're probably going to produce something that is more interesting to read and just more human and more twists and turns. It's not there. It's really not there yet. Whether or not it gets there, who knows? But for me, it's not a productivity tool at the moment.
So that's a key word, yet. So we might get to a point where it's actually, you know, supersedes our abilities. Who knows? But let's unpack currently where the technology is at and how we access this. So ChatGPT creates human-like and very realistic responses to inputs by making guesses about which fragments of text should follow previous sequences to best match the user's input. That is the gist of it. So you can maybe re-listen to that sentence. That's literally what it is. It strings together text to best match your input. Now, this is how it does this. It's based off a large statistical model that has ingested literally trillions of lines of text scraped off the internet using real human-like interactions on websites like Reddit, Wikipedia, and many more that is used to train these models. And again, there I use the word train. Like, again, it's a human-like attribute. So pick up how many human-like attributes we use when we talk about this technology, right? By training, we simply mean estimating the parameters that we use to do the statistical calculations in order to string together these fragments of words. Right. Or in fact, when we think about drawing a picture, to put together pixels next to one another to create an image that has the highest probability of it achieving what the user wants it to achieve. So think about if you think about a random Reddit post and someone asking, how do I change my car's oil? That is online. And the responses to that is online as well. So when I ask ChatGPT, how do I change my car's oil? I can now either assume, wow, this thing is so intelligent, knows everything about cars, or I can simply go, there's actually a human or thousands of humans that have answered similar questions. And all it is doing it is these parameters are being fit so that we can it can actually take your input, guess what you're trying to achieve, and then provide a response to give you something that seems human-like, really realistic, really intelligent. And then we look at that and we go, look, you know, there's a ghost in the machine, clearly.
Ghost in the machine should be the name of this podcast, actually.
No, you're talking. Ghost in your mail.
There we go. The one thing I just wanted to say on that is the way they train these models, you know, there's a lot of IP debate around, you know, people taking John Grisham's work and using that to train this thing to write. You know, is that not his IP? And there's a lot of court cases on this. So there was this great article written. So there's Ghostmail's weekly columnist, Dominic Ulifier, wrote this piece called Rage Against the Machine, Creatives versus AI. And it's really cool, Nico. If you haven't read it, you should go check it out. And it's basically about this tech that actually embeds code in images that then tricks the AI into thinking that, for example, a toaster is actually a hat. You know, and then you train this model that the next time someone asks for a toaster, it actually, you know, recreates an image of a hat. And it's quite difficult to go and fix. Now, I'm quite sure that the smart people who create these models will find relatively easy ways around this stuff over time. But I think it talks to a broader pushback here, which is, you know, what it means to be human and to what extent we are willing to accept machines actually doing this stuff for us, writing, art, music. I feel like for some reason, people absolutely draw the line at music. They'll partially draw the line at art, and I fear that no one will care about writing. But I mean, that's just my one worry. And then what will happen long term is to, you know, adapt to this. You'll have to learn from a writing perspective how to always have that human element, but then also how to help people solve problems in their businesses, as opposed to, you know, just giving them the written word. It's more a bit of strategy around that. But that's how life goes. You know, once upon a time, you could have been the best person in the world at working with horses. That job doesn't exist anymore. You had to adapt. That's how these things go.
And I think that's from a current vantage point. Certainly, I agree with you there. I mean, I don't want to read a book that's been written by AI or listen to music that's non-human. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. But then again, you know, 500 years ago, a scribe would have thought who would read something typed on a keyboard, right? So, you know, this technology is fluid. And I think the beauty of being human and our human experience is that we're adaptive, right? So we can easily adapt to new technologies. And initially it's scary, but later on we start to take the best parts of it, and the best parts that kind of fit our lifestyle. I think there's still a lot that we'll embrace about this technology. Certainly in its current form, it's interesting. And if nothing else, you know, that interest that it is sparking in, you know, amongst people to actually say, wow, can the technology do this? Can it actually draw something based on a prompt? This is now getting the creative juices flowing to perhaps in the future give us applications that we go, you know, this is essential to us. You know, even there's always that famous David Letterman episode where he was talking to Bill Gates about the email, and he said, well, we have mail, right? And everyone was laughing, like, why would we need email? Because we have the postal service. And so in hindsight, that is ridiculous. But at the time, people were just saying, why would I want an email? And so, you know, so if you consider what I describe ChatGPT to be, if you think about it very carefully, it is a phenomenal exercise in mimicry and information summation. So it's an incredible parrot, but it's certainly not intelligent, and it's definitely not creative. On the contrary, in fact, human creativity is mimicked by training these models in the first place. So you can, when ChatGPT draws a beautiful horse, to your point, what Dominique wrote is that it's effectively taking a horse already drawn or an image created by a human and just giving you that in a different, you know, with a different bow tied around it. So ChatGPT is like your friend at a braai, you know, that knows everything, very opinionated, but not necessarily based on any understanding, you know, but rather having read extremely widely about many topics and can have sort of a one sentence conversation about anything. But of course, that also, you know, if we take the analogy further, that is also the friend that can at times be a bit coherent, go on tangents, you know. So it makes it very informative, but also very entertaining if you have used ChatGPT, because sometimes it's garbage that comes out. And I think we're far away off from trusting this technology to the point where, you know, we're delegating writing pieces or writing opinions based on ChatGPT alone, because certainly the technology is not matured that way. And to my earlier point, it might be nuclear fusion in that we can say, look, it's achievable. We'll one day just be able to have a thought and it produces what we want. Even though in theory it might be the case, reality might be a bit different.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I am conscious of time. So I think we need to finish this off with a view on just investing in this stuff. At the end of the day, it is an investing podcast and we only have a few minutes left. So I think in your article, you pretty much talked to, you know, unsurprisingly broad diversified exposure, which is always a good idea to have in your portfolio. So not going and putting your entire retirement fund into NVIDIA, no matter how tempting that might be. Do you think that something like a NASDAQ 100 ETF gives you enough of this action that you're not missing out on what's going on in AI?
So I was actually, I thought you're going to ask me what single share I should buy, or what's going to be my favorite share. And I would have said the NASDAQ 100, which technically is a share. You can buy that as an ETF and it trades on our local.
That's why I didn't ask. I knew what your answer was going to be.
You knew my answer is going to be boring and say the most diversified exposure you can buy. Look, I think the NASDAQ 100 is a great ETF to hold. And even though it's run up hard, I mean, the performance last year was eye-watering and it's continued its run. I mean, there's a lot of action and excitement about the tech industry in the US. And so a lot of people are cautioning it might have run its course. Look, the NASDAQ 100, the beauty of that is you get exposure to a diversified set of companies at the forefront of this technology's development. That for me is the key, right? So even though we might not know how this technology will mature or play out, at least you're investing in the companies that once this matures and starts to get broader access, these are the companies building the infrastructure. They're building the roads, they're building the sidewalks. These are the guys that will own the technology that underpins our future application of AI. And so, you know, who is going to bet against the US keeping the lead in AI development? Certainly not me, right? So I think this is a great way to get access to potentially dip your toe into having exposure and also building exposure. You know, this for me is definitely a dollar averaging exercise. You know, you want to stagger your investment into the NASDAQ and build exposure to that and future-proof your investment portfolio to have access to this, but not be dependent on the entry point. So you know, if you know what I mean there, I think it's important to you know, not time your access, but just stagger your access to technology. But it's a great way to get access to the NVIDIAs of the world, the Microsofts, the Metas, Alphabets, and the like. And then also the beauty of that is you're diversified across a range of companies. So many more companies that will, you know, be at the forefront of this technology. I don't think we're close to being at the application phase yet. And so, you know, we're still building the infrastructure, like I mentioned. And when building the infrastructure in this space, you know, small, nimble, exciting are not words that I think are synonymous with your ability to secure $1 trillion rights to chips and build large data centers to house the technology required to make this technology broad-based. Because that's also the important point, right? Before this technology can be broadly used, there's a lot of investment that needs to be put into the machines and the data centers required to run this. So the engine is enormous, and we're still building the engine. Once the engine is complete and once, and I don't think there's going to be a single time where we say now it's complete, but once it gets broad enough for these type of algorithms to be built on the fly or to train them sort of more frequently, only then I do think will we see broader application. Because to your point, you know, I mean, a lot of people look at ChatGPT, and myself included, you look at it and you go, this is really interesting, but I'm not using it in my daily life to change how I work. We're still a ways off, I think, and getting there, that path will be paved, I think, by the companies predominantly listed in the NASDAQ.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I guess my stock pick to navigate this complex and ever-changing environment, thanks ChatGPT, is Microsoft, if I was going to pick just one. So I do own the NASDAQ 100 ETF, obviously. My ride or die remains Microsoft. I think they are at the forefront of just about everything, you know, AI included. I see they've actually just hired a new head of AI specifically. I saw Satya Nadella tweeting that this week. So yeah, the one thing I absolutely agree with you on is in this space, big is better. Yes, you might have an occasional company that comes out of the woodwork with some amazing tech and makes an absolute fortune. But I mean, good luck picking that, really. If you get that right, well done to you. You know, in reality, I think you've got to go with the big stuff.
They'll likely be swallowed by the big companies themselves. And maybe one last point, if you'll allow me, because I think a lot of the fear that people will have is to say, this is the next dot-com bubble. You know, clearly it's run hard, you know, avoid this exposure to this. The big difference between, you know, AI's development and, you know, all these technologies, emergent technologies and the dot-com crash, I think, is that these are very much real companies with real cash on hand investing in their capability to harness technology to improve their capability of generating earnings in the future. So if we look at past PEs or saying the price to current earnings or projected earnings is too high, well, look, if they get it right and they get these technologies to start to really scale their operations, I think future earnings might be so high, potentially making the current price look cheap. So it's a big difference. Dot-com, I mean, it was all fluff. A lot of these companies were just, you know, jumping in on the bandwagon, pets.com. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of case studies written about it. But this time, it really does feel a bit different. I mean, these are established companies, your Microsofts and the like, that have enormous cash piles. And they're simply investing in a technology which they believe, and, you know, they know their technology best, will improve their capability of generating earnings in the future. So I do think watch this space. I think there's going to be some hiccups along the way, some speed bumps, absolutely. But this technology, I don't think we're putting it back in the toothpaste tube.
Yeah, I fully agree. Nico, you're going to be late for your meeting that you told me you have to go to. That's why I thought we were done. But it's an exciting topic, and I'm glad we got that last bit in there. But now I'm going to make you go to your meeting. because ChatGPT won't save you from that. But thanks so much for being on the show. It really has been fantastic. I always love learning from you. And I look forward to doing the next one with you. And yeah, by then there'll be new news on AI. We'll see what's happened.
Yes. Thanks, Ghost.